It's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. I am so excited for today's show as we talk about unlimited life and what that's like actually living a life in which you have no limitations, in which you have financial freedom, in which you can travel, in which you can create the energy and the surge and the pleasure and the ecstasy of having all of your dreams come true. Today's guest is really the pinnacle of that. When you talk about the cherry on the sundae or the tureen on top of the castle, I mean, she really leads that life that's in complete flow, that's around the world, that's connecting with people, with blessings, with joys, with magic, with experiences everywhere that she goes. And for the first few years that I had the opportunity to meet her, turn into her, to have these shared experiences, every time I saw her, I was in somewhere different. We were in different states. We were in different countries, and every time I see her, she would just radiate this ease, this joy, this immense light. And she is an author, she's a coach, she's so many brilliant things, but mostly she is one of the greatest teachers of life and life force energy that I've ever met. Her name is Gina Lazenby, and she is just extraordinary. She is a speaker, an author, a teacher, a thought leader, and she is a thought leader in feminine leadership. And so if you know how difficult that is, as we talk a lot about the workforce, the changing energy, this is really somebody who is stepping forward, crossing lines, and opening doors for millions and billions of women in our society today and in the future to come. She works internationally providing educational programs for women leaders and for entrepreneurs. She acts as a discreet mentor. I love that, as a discreet mentor to accomplished and high-profile women leaders, and offers residential transformational retreats and programs that really are not only life-transforming, but business-transforming, financially transforming, relationship-transforming around the world. Her current work includes developing women's circles and networks, and she's a transformational catalyst. Everywhere she goes, she actually sets up a tent, not literally a tent, but the idea of a parachute of energy in which people are encompassed in. And it's amazing, wherever she goes, people are drawn to her. They're drawn to her work. They're drawn to her magnetism. They're drawn to her energy, to her knowingness, to her wisdom, and to her light. Previously, she has been honored for her pioneering work in creating change and personal development movements. She is currently distilling her insights in feminine leadership into her forthcoming book, The Rise of the Feminine, How Business and Society Can Ride the Coming Wave. Alongside this book, she is also collating data and research for her very next book, which is The New Masculine, and she's passionate about gender work that brings men and women together and honors their separate and different contributions. So if you are a man listening to the show, stay on the line. She has some incredible secrets, and the way that she talks about, they're not differences. They're not that you do this and women do this, or it's not about finger pointing. It's about a collaboration of energy, the masculine and the feminine, and how that really empowers the world to be in power and to really have a kind of unlimited life that we're talking about. She has a unique skill set in really big picture thinking and reading the patterns of business. And she uses her own blend of practical business insights and her conscious thoughts, and she works for thousands of women around the world and takes information from decades of exploring ancient wisdoms and spiritual practices and rolls it into the business society of today. The wisdom and skills she's developed as an international best-selling author and a TV expert commentator on healthy lifestyle and well-being, and the founder of the groundbreaking PR and marketing agency, leading many award-winning campaigns for clients. And she's written several books, and we'll talk about the books that she's written and the energy that she's written. But what's most amazing to me is from the very get-go, it's the flow in which she leads her life. She goes from one extraordinary thing to the next extraordinary thing. If you would think about monkey bars and going from one rung to the next, imagine if it was one extraordinary thing in one country, and then one extraordinary thing in another country, and one extraordinary thing in one state, and one extraordinary thing in another state. And she just goes from success to success, from business to business, from life to life, from flow of energy. And wouldn't we all love to be living a life like that? She has the most leading edge well-rounded promotional ideas in feminine leadership, organization skills throughout the world. She travels extensively. And there isn't even a word. Extensively is like such a little itty-bitty word compared to her travel. She travels the way that you and I just, get up and take showers, and every part of her beingness is part of new experiences, new journeys, new life. And she has an office based in Yorkshire, London, San Francisco, Sydney, and she collaborates with a wide-reaching network of associate experts around the world. She is a faculty member of the Brooklyn Institute in Sydney, Life Fellow of the Feng Shui Society Institute board member, and a member of the Leading Women in Africa. And she is a keen supporter and a visitor to the Hunger Projects and to their leadership training programs for women in rural India. She is singly one of the most extraordinary people I've ever met. She's certainly somebody that I think we all look up to, we all relate to, we all just say, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful to wake up somewhere new tomorrow, to meet new people and to love new people, to have no lines, no borders, no delineations, no, nothing stopping you from leading the kind of life that you always knew you were meant to live. And so I'm so excited for her wisdom, her heart, her spirit, her soul, her knowledge, and all that she's going to share with you today. So I'd like to welcome Gina to the show. Gina, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. What an honor to be here with you on the phone. Thank you for all that. I was listening to you thinking, who is this woman?
It is you. And it's so funny because I've never, of all the people that I know around the world, I've met people in Australia, I've met people in London, I've met people in the United States, and occasionally I'll run into somebody that I know here at an event, in London. But every time that I saw you for the first couple years, it was in some other state, it was in some other country, and I think that's hysterical. It was always like, so what are you doing here in this world? And, your paths crossed. So tell me how you began this extraordinary journey, because it really is an extraordinary journey. I think about when I look at your life and I think about, we talk about being on a water slide, and we've used that analogy before where you go on the water slide and then all of a sudden you're in the ocean, or you're in the pool or you're in the lake, and it's so exciting and it's wonderful and you're in this new environment. And then you get out and you say, let's do it again. And it seems that the flow of energy in which you lead your life and the choices that you make, the path. I feel like the Wizard of Oz followed the Yellow Brick Road, and eventually you get to this magical kingdom. And, and then your whole basis is there's no place like home and how to create a healthy home. And so tell me, how did you begin?
How did I begin? I think there's two or three beginnings. There's one life that where I began as a child growing up in the small seaside hotel in Yorkshire, where my mum was cooking for, 25 people, three meals a day in the summer season, the old-fashioned 1950s, 1960s hotel. I grew up in that kind of environment, and then a me formed from that, the hospitality me, the me that worked in the hotel industry. And then another me formed in the early 90s. And that was from, breakdown point. That was the, if you move forward in life from inspiration or perspiration, that would be the perspiration move. my biggest change came because things weren't working and because I didn't listen. A new me had to form. And that's when I became awake, conscious, and I thought more about, I thought more beyond the deadlines of what I was doing, and I began to understand who I was. And then another me, another lifetime has formed where I'm conscious and awake, and yet I wasn't happy. I had everything. It wasn't that I had everything materially, and I did. It's just I thought, I just said to God, use me. I'm here to do a big job. I'm here to do something. I'm here to serve. And find that for me, because my appetite for things I was doing had waned. And they're all interesting that they'd waned. And I was looking for what I was really here. So that happened in the mid-2000s. And since then, I can't say I've been ever looking for it, so much as the travel started, and it's been a becoming process. It's really understanding about me, exactly who I am underneath. It's peeling off of more layers. It's filling in all the gaps. And I suppose I only set off for a few months. It sounds like I've been traveling for years, but really in 2006, I kind of got on the plane, went to Australia the first time, liked it, went back a few months later, and each year I've visited Australia once, twice, maybe three times, and other places in between. And I don't commit to traveling forever. It's just that for the next quarter, for the next 6 months, that's what I know I'm doing, and by the end of it, I'll have a clearer idea. And I don't know, I'm receiving messages. I'm very much in a mode of flow. So, you know, that started in the mid-2000s when I asked that question, what do you want me to do, and use me.
I love that. Now, you had, I know that you authored a couple books on feng shui, and I'm always so intrigued, you know, and I've got so much more I want to talk to you about today, but I just want to touch on that because feng shui to me, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, is really about flow and energy. And so were you able to then translate your ability to trust flow and energy and knowing that if you place things in the right position or allow things that they would move so clearly and so differently and then use those tools and techniques in your life to create these businesses to flow and these relationships to flow and this travel to flow? Is it the same principle that you use?
It's all layered. Everything is connected. Whatever you name it, whether, wherever you come from, whatever discipline is, everything is connected. And, you know, there would be a time when I would make a placement, you know, something would go in the corner of a room. But often the most significant things that have happened have come as I made a placement. I didn't even get to making the placement in the corner that might have some impact, so much as in the corner within me, the placement was inside where I made a resolution. I decided, I resolved the clarity, I have flow within, and then the whole of the external world set up to mirror that. That's kind of a very advanced form of feng shui because you do start out moving the furniture and there isn't that there's no validity in that, just a depth in living fearlessly, I suppose. And it takes years to really, you think you know something and then years later you may read that book again or revisit that insight and get a completely deeper and different take on it because you've become somebody different. You see that piece that piece of wisdom, that data point, that knowledge differently and use it differently. So my feng shui journey grew, started out by finding out about it consciously. I knew what it was. I mean, prior to that, unconsciously, intuitively I knew, but I didn't have a language, maybe about 1992. But there was, interestingly, I think I had a lot of lessons in feng shui from the fact that I had two houses because would say to people, came to the training school and, you know, had the opportunity to talk to a lot of people about it, how if something happens in your home with a mirror, so for example, you know, you've got a lot of clutter, a lot of waste, you know, there's a lot of mess. When you tidy that up and then you're thinking about something, something will come into your life, you create a space for it. So that's kind of a given. But I got some really deep lessons when I had these two houses. And for example, in my house in Yorkshire, where I was beginning to spend more time, the washing machine broke. So you think, oh, bum, the washing machine's broken. I go to London, the washing machine broke. And then I'd be in Yorkshire and the boiler would have a problem. I go to London and the boiler would have a problem, you know, the central heating system. Began to see that whatever happened in one house, it kind of showed up in the other one. I had a blue Volkswagen car in Yorkshire. I got in the car and it was making a strange noise as I drove to the railway station and there was a hubcap on the wheel. I was missing. And when I got to London, I got in my car, my blue Volkswagen in London, and I noticed it made the same strange noise and also I noticed there was a hubcap missing. It was so spooky. It was so spooky that everything was a mirror image. So when something happened, I would then have to say, well, what does it mean? If the same thing happened in two houses, if the universe is giving me that insight, that message from a place, and it's repeated in the other place because those homes are reflections of me and my life and my drama and what's happening to me, what is the answer? And Cheryl, you can go book and look up and see noisy boiler or noisy car, what does it mean? You kind of have to ask yourself, what does it mean for me now? What is the message I am being given? That's the self-inquiry. That's the dialogue with the universe. You know, the universe is speaking to you through that. And just to complete the story, I was in my home in Yorkshire just before Christmas one year, and I got a phone call from the policeman in London who said, are you the owner of, you know, named the house? And I said, yes. He said, well, I'm in your front room. Somebody tried to break in, and I've finished the job. I've come in. I'm going to secure the house for you, and I'm ringing to let you know. I went, oh, goodness me. So I said, I'm very grateful. And I said, I'll be down in London in 3 days' time. And you know, then I kind of locked the house and took the key station, which is my house in central London. And then I put the phone number to the police, and then I think, that can you hear me?
Yes, I can, yes.
I put the phone down on him, and then I, in the house in Yorkshire, thinking, I'm going to be leaving this house in 3 days, and if everything happens in the other house the same, then I'm going to get broken into in the house in Yorkshire, and I'm leaving it. So that was the pattern. So I then made this very extraordinary phone call to the police to say, I'm going to be broken into.
What? Did you really do that?
Yeah. I explained to the telephone officer. I said, it's a very strange story. You won't believe. But I told her everything that happens is the same. I've been broken into in London, and I fear that I'm going to into in my house in Yorkshire. So she sent the policeman round within 24 hours. He spent 2 hours with me going around the house very practically pointing out places where I could improve security. So I made sure that anything that was truly valuable was very well hidden or removed, so I felt safe. I went to London, repaired the house there, and came back a few days later, and the house hadn't been broken into. Interestingly, I went down to the kitchen, and I noticed the kitchen door is glass, and up to about foot high, it was all sticky marks. And I went outside, and I had been broken into, but not by humans. I'd been broken into by sheep. And the sheep had come in, and it was their sheep nose at the glass door, and they'd eaten every single ivy leaf to the height they could get to, which was 3 foot. So it'd been completely stripped of leaves, and above that, you know, there was the ivy-clad cottage, but beneath that it was just, you know, stalks, pieces of wood, whatever you'd been. And so I then, of course, the question is, why did that happen? What does it mean? And when you are broken into, when there's an invasion of a border, when there's a violation of a boundary, you are forced to look at boundaries and borders in your life, in your relationships, and, you know, in business. It calls that to be looked on. I reflected on that, and in fact we had a stone wall that's been taken down because we bought some extra land, and the temporary wall hadn't, had been breached, it hadn't done its job. But that's in the physical world. It's the fact that it happened in both houses, the fact that
that's
consistently...
amazing. It's really, I'm going to jump in for just a second. That your sound is just a little tinny, which is, you know, I can understand you and hear you, but I just want to clarify some of the things you're saying for our listeners, just, you know, because we have people around the world, and I know that you are around the world, and I'm so interested in what you're saying. And so, you know, Gina was talking, you know, very clearly and succinctly about the fact that how there's a mirror image of things in your life. And I, you know, it's amazing to me that you would have a problem with the washing machine in both countries, that you would have a problem with the car and in both countries, and then you were just sharing in the fact that, you know, that your house was broken into and that you called the police, which I absolutely love, in your other home and said, I'm going to be broken into. And I love the fact that they came out and showed you a better way to secure your home. That says a lot about them. They didn't just say crazy lady, that they actually came out and calmed your nerves and gave you options. And I'm sure being able to handle it and stand in that power shifted things as well. And then the fact that your house did get broken into, but not by humans, but by sheep, that actually came and took food. But when you're saying that, you know, what it does is it forced you to have those borders and those boundaries in your life. And it's interesting to me because I know for myself that that has been one of the greatest confusions for me on being on this planet, is boundaries and borders, because I don't really understand. There are no truly lines between states, and there's no delineation between you and me, or between, you know, the dark and the light, or, you know, between, you know, my puppies and myself, for love and joy. And so what is a boundary and what is a border, and where do we create that space that holds us responsible, that we contains our light, more like a container, more like a tube of our world, of our consciousness, of, you know, our knowingness, our goodness, our intentionality, whatever that is, and how the universe has so boldly given you messages that if you did not listen to them and you did not hear them and you did not recognize them as messages, that they came back as the exact same messages in another space to mark your awareness of them. And I think that's so profound. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary.
So this is the thing about bold messages. We are being given these messages all the time. What we need to do is ask a question so that we get something back, and a lot of people don't ask questions. And we have to expand our listening, and we have to look. And that's what I've been training myself to do, is ever vigilant, interpret everything. You know, rather than it's a problem, oh, my God, this is a problem. It's like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what that means. I wonder how I can use that. I wonder what's going to happen next, you know, when something awful happens, in quotes. Because they're just things. They're just events. But we do make them mean often awful things. And then we get sad and stressed and upset. And then we think it's about us. When we could expand our understanding and think, well, actually, this is a stepping stone along the way. It doesn't look very in the context of the bigger story. It's only little. It doesn't matter, because it's leading me around the corner where there's some fantastic scenario I can't see from where I'm standing now. So yes, expanding our capacity to see and listen is what it's about.
That's brilliant. It really is. So when you go into a company and you're working with businesses or with Fortune 500 companies, or you're working in women's empowerment, are you looking for the signs? Are you looking for those patterns to interrupt or to read, or to how do you instinctually do what you do?
It's interesting, because you can see it in the smallest detail, because it's all about actors. You know, out there, there's an image being projected, something's happening, but it's only an expansion of the original seed. So you can look at the minutiae of what's going on, how you're served by one person, how you're served at a desk, a reception desk, how you interact with somebody in a hospitality situation, you know, reading the menu, seeing about how easy it is to park, you know, what's available in the lobby. Even as a visitor to organization, you can see, you can get a little glimpse of the bigger picture from the small. And also, you might even be sent the gift of an interaction. Somebody says something in the lift. You know, there's an altercation, there's an exchange. And you think, okay, this could well be a seed of communication that shows me what's going on in the whole. If the whole was run like this, how good or bad would it be?
It's profound when you say it that way, and I love the fact that you can see and that you listen and that you have this heightened awareness. And I know that I haven't had the opportunity over the past couple of days to talk to you about some of your women's work. And we were also talking about how women and men can work together in a more succinct way by really doing exactly what you're talking about. Really listening, really being aware, really being present, and really laying things out for people in a way that they would be able to be in the picture with you. And so can you talk a little bit about that? Because I just think that that's just extraordinary. And I was so intrigued when you were telling me about, you know, the work that you're doing now.
Well, you know, over the years in the quest for equality, for equal rights, which, you know, has been named the feminist movement, you know, whatever it's called, we're on a trajectory where we're recognizing that we're equal, you know, and it goes beyond gender to race and creed and sexuality and everything else. But, you know, just focus on the gender for the moment. I can speak more, I don't know, it's really speaking more to England. there's been such a focus on not wanting, a critical correctness, I think, not wanting to upset by referring to gender and referring to any kind of difference. So there's been this trend sustainness that women can do the job as good as a man. That's really been the focus, that if you engage me, I will deliver as good as a man. When really we have to move on from that and say, I can do a great job and it will be different. I will bring different skills. And I think that's the shifting. It's appreciating the difference. And when we appreciate the difference and understand more what it is, then we can leverage it. So that, this huge international conversation in so many countries about should we have quotas for having more women on the board of companies, because they're missing at the top. You know, they might be coming out of university with great degrees and more than half of them are graduates. They're going into the workplace. Does the years and the decades by, they're leaving the workplace. And this is, you know, I've had these conversations for years with women about how they reinvent and find themselves outside of the corporate workplace. And they're such a missing resource. They're so missing from the top. So how do you get the women at the top? And what we want to do is, and I'm not saying that legislation for quotas is either right or wrong, because where it is happening, it's really making change, and maybe they're just the lead examples. But what we want to have is the men who have the authority, those in charge, to say, we need women here. We need the feminine energy. We're missing it. We can see that we will be so much more profitable. The International Monetary Fund says that companies that have much more gender balance and more women leaders at the top get 29% more return profit. And so we're making a big financial impact where we are able to make a difference. So I want to enable this culture shift where we go, we're missing the women in their feminine contribution, and it's valuable. We want that. That's what we want, rather than it's not fair, we ought to have more women, how can we get a few more women, or let's get a token woman in. Just let that conversation go and really focus on the gifts that women have, complement, and, you know, have been known to bring, you know, and create that balancing energy.
I love that you're talking about this. And again, I want to do just a little recap, you know, for those that are far and wide. But, you know, when you talk about the fact that, you know, women fight for the right and say, I want to do this job, or I can do this job just as good as a man can do this job, and that, you know, by saying it's not going to be exactly the same, it's going to be different because it's uniquely you. And you're bringing your qualities, which are equally as valuable and equally in contribution, and by being able to allow that incredible difference and that incredible contribution, and not having it be this war, but instead a collaboration of energy and skills and qualities and virtues and talents that can really grow a company, that can grow a business, that can change a nation, and can really change a world. And I love that that's the global conversation that you're having, and that the way that you're stepping into this and the way you're opening these doors and these windows and turning on lights and rooms for people is finding the value in which they bring something special and something quite unique and really quite worthy to the table.
And recently, you know, in the news in America, you've had this terrible shutdown of the government. It happened in October. And there was a Senator Mark Pryor, what was saw him on, you know, a recording of him on television, on the internet, saying how they'd had a breakthrough within the deadline after the shutdown that had been happening for a couple of weeks. And it was the women senators who took center stage lead role in this. And not only A, did that happen, which is brilliant, but B, he acknowledged it, because so many things that we do don't get acknowledged. You know, we don't acknowledge them ourselves, and they don't, you know, we all have stories about how we said things and they were ignored, and then a man said them and we just feel as though we're invisible. But this was, he was saying that we just stood back in awe and watched the women do this. And I think there's a group of 20 women senators who are cross-party, six Democrats and I think six Republicans and maybe 14 Democrats, regularly meet for pizza, for supper. for talking, for baby showers. They're a community. They have built these relationships. And in times of need, that's what we want, trusting relationships. They looked at each other and said, we've got to do something. Because what happened when the men couldn't agree, they started to hurl insults at each other. You know, the conversation degraded. And that wasn't helping anybody. So the women said, okay. They rolled up their sleeves and they took a lead in conversations about what can we yield here, how can we collaborate, what can we do to open the conversation, to get it going again and do what needs to be done. And they worked together and they did that. And the men went, wow, that's great. But that is leadership. That's feminine leadership. That's what the world's missing. And we're seeing these very high profile examples of where men are getting themselves a bit of a rut in old patterns that aren't serving, and new conversations need to be had. And if it takes women to come forward and feminine energy, then that's what's needed. And we've got to step up and do that and have these bigger conversations about how can we make the difference that's needed.
That's just brilliant. And then so with that, talk to me about your new book, The Rise of the Feminine, How Business and Society Can Ride the Wave. So what is the conversation you want to share in the book? What are you reaching out to say, and how can people be part of riding this wave in their own lives, in their own city, in their own villages, in their own town, in their own world, and, you know, how can they be part of not only just the global conversation, but the global shift and change?
Let me think of a few key points. I think one point is what I'm doing really is articulating what's already out there. Any Google search will tell you there's thousands of women's networks and there's stories of, you know, gender balance moving forward, still behind in many areas. Only this week, I can't remember who it was that published the gender gap and about how the Nordic countries are so far ahead. So it's a kind of distillation of what I see is happening, you know, A, what I read, but anybody can read that. But it's what I'm seeing as I travel, my experience of what happened in Australia with having a female prime minister and then her having taken out of that lead and the terrible, really the sexism that she was subjected to. And she was the lead in the country. So I've seen things happen around the world, and I'm feeling the energy. I meet groups of women. I'm hearing these microcosm conversations that reflect the bigger picture. So I'm kind of articulating that. And I think one of the things I'm pointing out is that we are all connected. And if we're all connected, then if we have a great life here in maybe California or wherever, then there are women in other parts of the world that are not safe, not having a great life. And so we can't sit back and say, we got it. You know, I've got a good job here and I've got a good position. I feel equal. It's all okay for me. It's not okay for a lot of other women. It's not really safe for them. It's not, even not safe for women in the developed world. You know, with domestic violence, it hasn't disappeared. So we have to support all the women. We have to see that we're all connected and support all the women and understand practically what does that mean. Does that mean laws have to be changed? Does that mean we have to change the way we show up, give opportunities and listening to women? I think the other thing is, as this rise of feminine energy and women's empowerment is happening, what does it mean to men? And it doesn't mean that if the feminine energy goes up, the masculine energy goes down. I think that's a very clear thing to say, that men have been leading, they've had these positions of authority at the power tables making decisions, women haven't been there. And if we come up, we're joining them. We're not saying, out boys, it's our turn. We're joining them. We're coming to the table where they're at in significant numbers to create that balance. So that's what I want to speak to women and men, that we really need a conversation between us. What do the new relationships look like if we don't look to our man as the provider in our family, because this archetype still exists, and that I'm just getting a bit of extra money and I'm looking after the home and he's the provider and his identity is attached to that, especially when so many of the male jobs are disappearing, so many men's jobs in manufacturing are disappearing. It's harder now for men to feed their family, you know, with having on a good salary. So many of them are unemployed and so many of the increasing jobs available are ones that women are taking. So what do we expect of men? And that's a conversation for us to have. What does the new relationship look like when the power is shifting and changing with so much more equality and financial equality? So I think that's I think that's a key thing to look at, is this aspect of the new masculine. And that, as I am, you know, kind of researching, working on the first book, I can see the other book emerging, because we need to support the men. And I don't think they're too happy in some of the corporate situations they're in. And we need to help them in connecting with other energies of caring, compassion, love, intuition, spiritual nature, that mean that they haven't felt safe to connect before. And now us training that space and being intuitive and bringing that quality into a work situation gives others permission to do that as well, so that we are accessing our whole selves and not just part of our energy. Because women operate from masculine energy too. It's just that we need to have access to both those energies to make, you know, better decisions.
That's just so, you know, as I'm listening to you say that, something in my heart just says, yes, it's so true, and it's so necessary, and it's so needed. And that's when we think about energy to begin with, the beautiful, unique blend of the masculine and feminine, and having that conversation that actually opens those doors and opens those rivers of flow and energy. And now I know that wherever you go, one of the most unique things that I have found about you in your life, and there's a list from my nose to my toes of unique things about you, and probably all the way up to the heavens and, you know, all the way down to the roots of the earth, but that wherever you go, you have this, I don't want to say following, because it's not like you have a fan clubs, but you have energy. I always think, when I think of you, as almost like the acupuncture needles on the body, that you, in each city you go, or each state, or each country, you open an energy field, you open a gateway for energy, and people are drawn to that. And you're able to create these incredible events and collaborations of people. You're one of the most incredible connectors of bringing people together, and like energy together, and bringing people together to actually share their visions and their dreams and to create wonderful things throughout the planet. And so, was that something you set out to do, or it's a natural gift, or something you look to continue to do and grow and be able to teach others to do?
You know, it starts in the kitchen, you know.
Okay, I'm coming to your house. Which one? Wait, you've got a lot of homes.
You know, for me, it's the safest place to be, in the kitchen making a meal. And I love to cook. And, you know, I said about my first life growing up in the hospitality industry. I have no fear of cooking for large numbers because, you know, I have fluency and flexible skills in that. There are lots of other areas I don't have that fluency and flexible skills. It's scarier for me, but I'm safe in the kitchen. And when I'm hosting women's gatherings, kind of started a little group in London of women entrepreneurs. We said we didn't want to meet in the entrepreneur network normal meeting centres in a hotel. It was chairs facing a screen, and invariably it was a male teacher. And we said, this isn't community. We have 10 minutes of chatting at the end before we have to rush home. We actually want to sit and talk. So we created our own environment. So when we reflected our first gathering, through the eons, women worked on the soil together. They've woven and stitched together. They've knitted. They've cooked food. This is what we want to do as women. So we are business women. We meet over food, and where we can, we cook together. If we can't, we do potluck. But then it's a great leveler. Everybody's in the kitchen helping, getting the food out, drink, what can I do? And you've got managing directors, and you've got, you know, therapists, and women from different walks of life, different positions, different influences in the wealth, you're just meeting in the kitchen. By the time we get to sit in a circle and talk, we know each other, we're in community, and that is the fastest way to connect. And that's what I love. I love connecting people. I do that with the women's gatherings. I'm doing a dinner party, you know, tomorrow in Los Angeles, and the invitation goes out to my circle of friends, and it's about food. And I'm always seen to be meeting someone, and then the next person I meet, oh, yes, I've just met somebody in the And so, you know, I do love connecting. But I must say, because I value home, the energy of home, and I know it's important, and it's a layer of me, I'm always creating homeliness around me. So travel isn't a stress for me, because staying in somebody's home, or I'm renting a home, or I'm enjoying being in a hotel, but I have the preference of being in a private home rather than a hotel, I'm creating a rhythm. I'm understanding that I've got a little home, but I'm at home wherever I am. I have a certain way of packing, and that's what I'm doing. And I'm knowing I'm going somewhere. It does sound odd. I mean, it's funny you said about the acupuncture thing, but I feel I need to be there, and I don't always know why, and it's okay. And I'm often working below the radar, and there's no big fanfare, and just go in and see some people and leave. Take some little insights with me and take them somewhere else. And, you know, it could have an impact. They might not. But I feel that energetically what I'm doing is important. It's important to me. It's helping me in a process of becoming. It's like my own curriculum of being, rather than writing out a list of things I need to learn and learning them. I'm learning and understanding myself, and it's a life of complete authenticity. You know, this is me. And I am happiest in the kitchen, and I'm delighted to cook food, and I love it when people come around and we share stories and we share more of ourselves. That is bliss, really.
That's such a beautiful concept. And I loved on your bio where it says that you're a discreet mentor. When you say that you come in kind of to these, you know, countries and to these places under the radar, and I have a very dear friend, my friend Bill Kakmus, who is in Nashville, and he is a show whisperer, and he will come on to programs and to television and work with the artists or work with the producers of the show, and it's, you know, it's subliminal work. But I love when you say discreet mentor, because I really do think that you come in, and it's this almost like, you know, in the fairy tales, where somebody had the magic wand and they waved the magic wand, and then all of a sudden everything is better or changes, or all of a sudden there are beautiful things on the table or gorgeous clothes or, you know, the horses, the white horses, but that you somehow come over to a place and just by your presence of energy, by waving your energy, that somehow everything gets all beautiful and changes somehow. And it's an amazing thing that you have.
But I do have a few friends throughout Mary Poppins, and I laugh. And it's a while since I've seen, probably 2 years since I've seen Mary Poppins, but I watched it recently. And it's interesting, you know, that carpet bag that she opens up, she pulls out the lamp stand and the hat stand and everything. And I do have, you know, a lot of thought goes into my traveling, and I often have just the thing, just by pure chance. I often have just the thing that's needed in the moment that I happen to be carrying with me. And, you know, it's like I'm on a little mission. By sheer chance, I show up with a piece of software or...
America. I'm sorry for interrupting. There used to be in America a show called, you know, Let's Make a Deal. And they would ask you, do you happen to have, you know, a banana and a razor or a stapler or whatever it is in your purse? And if you happen to have that thing they thought of, you know, you pulled it out of your bag. You know, you could win all these prizes and awards, but your whole life is like that. You just pull things out of your magical bag of life to be able to give people what they're looking for.
Oh, how funny. Well, I don't know. I am kind of blessed with living a life of synchronicity. I just shared a synchronicity flow story that I had when I was in Sydney. I was promoting a women's transformation workshop that I was hosting in Bali earlier this year. And in promoting it, on the road, as it were, I was writing blog stories about things and then saying, you know, this is something we'll be discussing or looking at our retreat. And I was quite busy. And I was thinking, oh, what a lot of work this is writing. And, you know, if something's stressful at some point, then I check in and go, okay, what's causing this energy? Why is it off slightly? You know, asking the question rather than just being suffering. Anyway, I woke up one morning and I thought, oh, does anybody read my blog? I cried from the heart. I didn't want to write. I knew I had to. Anyway, I just thought, oh, does anybody read my blog? I'm writing all these things. Anyway, that day, I'm walking around the harbour in Sydney with a friend. And a woman runs up to me, grabs me by the arm and says, Jean Maidenby, you don't know me. I read your blog. And I was just standing there with my mouth open.
Great.
I couldn't believe it.
That's fantastic.
I couldn't believe it. She was telling her sister She was from England, lived in France, and she was over in Perth with her sister and visiting Sydney. Never met me before. I don't really think I looked like anything that was on my blog, but the fact that she said it the same morning as my request went out shows that I'm in the flow, you know? I have a communication channel that I haven't been forgotten. That, you know, in that moment, I am doing the right thing. And that was my check-in and the universe, whatever, coming back to me and affirming and saying, yes, we're listening. Everything's fine.
Okay, well, then this is a perfect time for me to ask you, how do people read your blog and how do they find you and your information?
You know, I think if you just Google Gina Lazenby, you'll get, I've got a blog called Woman at Large, and that's me, the little stories of where I am around, lots of woman-centric things and quirky things, and I have another blog called Feminine Leadership Today. I interview people about feminine leadership and adding more and more stories to that. I've had quite a few conversations that I've had with Paul Little be going on there about soft power and the shift in the world and the work I'm doing. The Feminine Leadership Workshop I'll be doing in Sydney and also hopefully soon in London. So, yeah, that's the way to find me. We mentioned I had a couple of books on feng shui. They're, you know, they're probably on the second-hand route now in Amazon. They're coffee table books. They're no longer available in the bookstores, but people recycle their books, and one of the things the book says is clear your clutter, and people sometimes clear my book out, so they might find it.
That's funny. Now, what is the name of your book?
Well, it should be called the Feng Shui House Book. Sometimes in America, books change name, but Gina Lazenby, Feng Shui House Book, will track it down. The other one is The Healthy Home. Again, I'm not sure whether it's a slightly different name in America, but my name and those book names will find those books because, you know, the search facility is now so that you can easily find things when you search around the web.
I love The Healthy Home, and I love that. So, you know, I'm going to ask you for three simple tips that anybody can do to in their house to create a calmer or better or more loving or synchronistic energy. Are there just simple things that you would say anybody can do this? And it's, like you're saying, clear clutter, you know, is one thing to do. And why is that important? And should everybody, when, you know, they're not listening to this show anymore, race out to their garage or their house? Or can you just clear your desk and can your life be better?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first nature of things, the microcosm and the macrocosm, you don't have to do the whole house. I mean, it's great to act in the whole house, but starting in one corner, just clearing the desk or one corner, will inspire you to do more. So starting small is always great, rather than I haven't got time to do the whole house and not doing anything. But, you know, I think what's coming to me is organization. There's something so wonderful about thinking about how you want to use the space, what is that space for, and arranging everything around it. And I don't know whether I saw something in a magazine about the rage zone, which is the zone that the chef has within arm's reach, everything he can reach, and if it's outside of that, he gets in a rage because he can't reach it. But the idea of being in the kitchen and having everything to hand, I mean, for myself, the things I use most are nearest to me, and then all my, everything is clearly labeled and not stuffed at the back of the cupboard, so you only end up using the spices at the front of the cupboard and don't use the ones at the back. How I use the space to serve me. So a little bit of investment of effort and time to organize things with labels and have them there, because clutter isn't only excess things and untidiness, it's also things that don't have labels, that you know you've got it somewhere, but you don't know where it is. So labeling structure is so important to flow. It's like creating an irrigation channel for the water to come down. You know, water's going to come. Is it going to be organized when it comes in? So I think organization, and I'm highly organized because I travel so much, I have to think ahead. Everything I'm going to need in another climate, and I'm not going to be at my desk at home, I have to travel with it. So organization is one thing. The second thing I would say is fill your house with love. Feel love, think love. You know, heart breathing, beauty, loving, welcoming. The energy of love is a food, it's a nourishment, and it does so much to support all the lives and lifestyles, the lives of all the people who live in a home, for it to be a loving place that you can't wait to come home to, and that, you know, people love to come to, and everybody can interpret that in different ways. But putting love into a home, loving the home, love energy, it makes the home brighter. And what would the third one be? Get really good sleep. Set up your bedroom so that, number one, you get really great sleep. The sleep, sleep, the key notions in life.
That's funny. Now, I have a question about feng shui. And, you know, it's a simple question, but maybe it's a complicated one. Who knows? It's about plants. Is it okay to have silk plants and plastic plants, or do you really just want to have live plants to have the energy flow, or just having the idea of a plant, is that great just to be able to say, oh, that's green and it represents life and beauty and all that is?
That's a great question, because people do have silk plants. Plants do two things. When they're real, they're a life force. And so when they're real and they're thriving, water's going into them, you're looking after them. If you're ever in a house and all the plants are all screaming out for water and looking desiccated, the person who's living there is too busy to look after the plants. It's always a sign they're too busy to look after themselves. Something is not being nurtured in the home. It's a kind of a, one of those factual things about, are you looking after yourself? So plants need looking after. And they need water. There's a rhythm of nature you're bringing into your home. So that's always good to have in the home. If you have a silk plant, you don't have that life quality. What you're bringing into the space is architecture, shape, color, the color of green. Maybe you've got a pink or yellow color on it. And so you're bringing elements of what it represents, different energy. So that's fine, but you need to bat them. If they then become holders of dust, then you've got more of a problem. So it's not wrong to have silk plants. It has a different effect. So look after the plants you've got. Funnily enough, I had a tall plant in my office years ago. I think when I had a personal development center in London, and I noticed that they had a stalk that the plant was attached to, and the top of the plant had continued growing. Pole stopped. Instead of growing higher, it grew and then it had gone down. And I walked up to the plant and I lifted it out. Gosh, if I got a taller stick, my plant would be higher. And it was actually in the same corner. I got a taller stick and the plant was suddenly like 2 foot higher. Suddenly, I got a call from BBC television within a few hours changing that plant in the fame corner. And they came around to see me. They were actually wanting to do an interview about Tony Robbins meeting Bill Clinton in the White House in the new year. And they knew that I'd met him and, you know, they wanted to do this story. And they came around and with me on television with my plant showing them what I'd done, which is a story within a story. So funny. But, you know, all these things have an impact. So just make sure if you do have a plant that it can grow well, but you don't want to limit your growth.
That's great advice. That really is. And I love the fact that that's your background and your energy and your focus and that people can go to Amazon and find that. So your name and Healthy Home or Feng Shui for those that are listening. And then I really want to talk to you and I about on your resume talking about leading women of Africa. And also the Hunger Projects and their role in India. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening in other parts of the world and how we can maybe assist and heighten our awareness?
You know, there's a tendency, I have to own for myself, to think that I'm a privileged woman living in a Western developed world and these poor women in India and Africa need our help. But, you know, the more there are possibilities of meeting, exchanging, you realize these are incredible, powerful women, and we learn a lot from them. It's not a one-way exchange, it's a two-way. And what I learned when I met these women in India was, especially walking to going to these villages where maybe, you know, outsiders haven't been before, and meeting the women and seeing their commitment, walking for 2 days to go to a leadership workshop to learn. Sorry, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can, absolutely.
Coming in on my phone, and I thought it was a beep in the show. But I learned so much from these Indian women, the sacrifices they went to, and what they used, what they did with the knowledge they had, the change they made. It made me really think, my goodness me, you know, I need to do more. And certainly with Africa, African continent is so interesting. You know, when you only read about it from a distance, we read about it through filtered media. We don't get the excitement potential in the continent. And because women are moving from such a backward position, they're so repressed, being so repressed, there's a huge surge of energy moving forward. And the women there are committed to change. There's a fantastic organization called South African Women in Dialogue. And they've made some huge changes in South Africa where when they were asked to vote, like, you're the wife of the husband you will vote for, they said, no, no, we want to know what your policies are on these things. These are the priorities that we've discussed. We want to know where you stand on these, then we'll vote. Because when we get in that voting booth, only we know who we'll vote for. But they had to listen to the women, and they were organized. And that's something that we're not in the West. All these separate voices, all these separate units, we're not uniting our voice to say, government, this is what we want. Listen to us. We'll vote for you if you do this. And I think that's something that we can take as a lesson from the women in Africa. And finally, the Leading Women of Africa is an amazing organization that is representing women. One of the things they're doing is like helping women get involved in trade missions. So they have an initiative with rebuilding the infrastructure of Africa. And I must say, you know, I think of women who, you know, we buy their necklaces and beads to help these small enterprises. But in Africa, there are women who are winning contracts to build 400 homes. Their companies are getting contracts for gas utilities. So there's a huge movement of women being empowered to take a lead in Africa. And they're not just published and not educated. But I found that very exciting that women are really doing amazing things in Africa, given the chance. And that's a lot of organizations are doing and empowering them. So they're moving forward in leaps. They really are. I think there's a lot we can learn.
That's exciting. You know, it kind of takes my breath away when you think about somebody that would walk miles to go to a women's empowerment meeting. And, you know, people that do that. We work with an organization called One Voice in Los Angeles, which feeds a lot of the families under poverty level. And they have the Adopt a Family Project. And they do these incredible days where they feed these families and offer food and toys for Christmas and kids. And people walk miles, you know, without shoes, with very little clothes, and they're outside and they're freezing to be able to, you know, receive. And when people walk great distances and travel these incredible roads and these incredible obstacles and these incredible journeys to receive information, to receive empowerment, to receive community, to receive service, to receive love, to receive understanding and oneness and, you know, wisdom, knowledge, to change, all of those things, it does. It gives you an entirely different perspective to look at what we consider strength, what we consider, and there, to us, We have very limited, you know, what is the country that has like 1,000 different words for snow?
Yeah.
Is that like the Eskimos have like 1,000 different words for snow, and we just say snow, but to them each, you know, level is so completely different, and there's so many different levels of encouragement, of bravery, of curiosity, of adventure, and like you're saying, of absolute strength and power and empowerment. And I love the fact that you have had the ability to witness it, and not only witness it and recognize it and realize it, but that you can share it so beautifully with the audience of the show, because I really do think that it's important that people know that and how incredibly powerful that is, that there are women around the world really willing to take those steps and take those journeys.
We are so powerful. We don't realize our power individually in the situations that we're in, and we don't realize our power as a group. And that, I think, if we realize that and focus on that, we can do the world-changing things that the world absolutely needs. We need to step up and do that. And we see women doing it in Africa and India and around the world, and we need to take a leaf out of their book. We need to take the lead from them. They're showing us the example.
I think that's just genius. I really do, and I love the fact that you're doing that, and I love that you're in such flow around the world, and that we were having the conversation that sometimes you'll show up and you don't even know why you're showing up in a particular area. You just know you're supposed to be there. And the fact that you have so much trust And so what does trust mean to you? Because that's when I look at you, it's just like you just trust the universe, life, people. You live in this whole level of trust in the infinite knowingness that everything is going to be okay and you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Trust comes from practice and not reacting to things. So something horrible happens or uncomfortable or unfortunate, and rather than reacting to it and getting upset, I think, okay, I wonder if this is going to make me have to go somewhere and then I'm going to meet somebody I need to meet. So I live a life of wonder and inquiry because it's much easier than living a life I want everything to work, and when it doesn't work, I'm going to get really pissed off about it and cross and stressed when it's not going my way. If I ever notice that I'm uncomfortable or if I'm tending to stress or it's not in flow, I'm thinking, well, it's not in flow. I'm not doing the right thing. So I'll stop, I'll rethink, and I think, how do I get myself back into flow? And I think that it's a commitment to feeling good all the time. It's to work on my inner light and feel good all the time. And honor if something happens. It's not like I'm smiling and I'm covering things up. Because things do happen, and I don't necessarily plan them. And so I have to work with them, and I have to treat them as some kind of blessing in disguise and look for the gift and keep myself in good shape, because when I do that vibrationally, I'm going to attract to me the things that I'm supposed to, because I am putting out the right vibration. I'm operating at the right level rather than smiling, covering it up, and underneath being an upset and just, there isn't the resonance there. So I have to do it. I can't talk about not do it. I have to do it. I have to, because then it means my life does become a gift. So I have to be blessed. And I choose. It works to be in flow, to be in that trusting space that there is this moment, and there only is this moment, and here I am in flow. I'm in alignment. The right frequency, everything that's happening is exactly what is supposed to happen in this moment. And how am I going to interpret it? How am I going to use it? What am I supposed to do in this moment? So I don't have to worry about whether I know something and what's going to happen in the future, because in that moment, I get what I need, especially if I ask. That's the thing. You've got to remember to ask. You've got to remember to ask. Please, can I have some help? Please, can I have some guidance? What happens now? Send me the help. Yeah. Call in reinforcement.
I think that's great. And you say that and we laugh about it and it seems so easy and so simple. And yet when you talk to people, so many people will tell you that to ask is the hardest part. That most people are so afraid to ask for help. And to ask for what they don't know and to ask for advice. And that I know that that's one of the things that always amazed me, that when you have a child and you have a little itty-bitty child, they want to learn how to play the piano, you take them to a piano instructor or to a ballet classes or you send them to school or to be educated. But yet as adults, we think we're supposed to know everything and be able to do everything all by ourselves somehow. Instead of thinking there's somebody else that might know this better or might be able to help me or might be able to teach me, or even that I can go inside and ask spirit and ask God, and why asking is almost, there's in America, I know that we, are even afraid sometimes to ask questions in school. People are afraid to raise their hand and to ask because they're afraid people are going to think they're not as smart, they're not as, whatever. And so we're afraid to ask. And I remember that Roger Hamilton, right, was saying that when in America, that when people, share information, we call it cheating. And in other countries, they call it collaboration.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. And so why do you think it's difficult to ask? And how do you allow yourself to ask, to really know it's okay to ask?
Well, this is something I learned because years ago, especially, for many years, for most of my working life until the 90s, at least the 90s, 1990s, I was operating very much in my masculine mode, making things happen, playing the game of, I mean, still a woman, but, you know, I was more in my assertive action energy than anything else, than my magical intuitive energy. At least I wasn't conscious of that. And part of my identity was I had answers. He paid me to have answers. I went in as a consultant. I would be paid. So I could never show up by saying, I don't know. I'd always have an answer. And often I would have an answer because I had this intuitive process which I didn't know anything about. I would just open my mouth and an answer would come out. But I was, wasn't cocky, but I was kind of either had answers or I very quickly found an answer. And then in the 2000s, I went into this zone of the not knowing, and I was told that, you know, this is where I really needed to be. It's a very scary place of not to know, and I couldn't even say I don't know. In fact, I never ever said that phrase, I don't know, never said it. But there came a point where I realized the productive and creative nature of not knowing, because when you don't know, in that space of saying, I don't know, it's like the levers all shift, things open up. And then suddenly you have access to every possible answer to come in. And it's creative because then rather than saying, I know, and coming out with some answer that you've known from before or you grab at, you've cut off other possibilities. So it's a very creative space to be in the not knowing. And that's where I've learned to be in the not knowing. I don't know. I really don't. Because there is a greater intelligence around me that knows everything, that if it's the right question. So asking the right question, crafting the question, putting energy into a quality question, really putting energy into that, leads you to this creative zone where an amazing response comes. And my dialogue, when I gave you that example about me crying out for, oh, does anybody read my blog? And asking that question, and then that amazing woman coming up and saying, I read your blog. I kind of have that interaction with the universe because I'm in this space. And that question at that time was just check in that I hadn't been forgotten. And the universe saying, no, we haven't forgotten about you, so we'll send you this woman to say that. So I'm in this dialogue of inquiry. It's a way of being for me now, and I train myself to be in there. So I think that if you have as part of your identity that you know, which is very masculine, and men, you know, not so keen on asking questions because they want to be seen that they have all the answers, I think if we validate the inquiry process, that we validate this intuitive, like this seeking, and it's okay not to know, but to be open, then it enables the shift, and we can be in that questioning and inquiry process and being in more in the don't know. Answer the question.
Hi, Gina. This is Chris, the producer. It looks like we dropped Nicole, so she'll call right back in.
Okay,
no problem.
So am I still online? Okay, am I
yeah,
still
we're
online?
Still on. We're still live on the air. It's
okay,
oh, she's back. She's back. Hi, Nicole.
Okay. Hi. Nice to hear your voice.
I'm
love it. Just go with the flow.
Right.
It's always just go with the magical flow. So, which is interesting, you know, for me, because I know that you have your own show, Curious Times. And so when talking about energy and flow, is this something that you talk about a lot and seems to be a global conversation?
Curious Times?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. We talk about energy all the time.
And is it the same that people are really finding that it's a trust factor in the ask? Because is the ask something difficult
yeah,
for people?
Yeah, there's a lot of us that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that struggle with it. And, you know, but, and it, you know, it is what it is. I don't know how to put it, but, you know, you know, because what we all forget is that there's a bigger picture, you know. So if we want to manifest X, Y, or Z, that's fine. But if there wasn't a bigger plan for us to have X, Y, or Z, then we can manifest until the cows come home, and we probably won't get it. And so, you know, sometimes that struggle is there. You know, people have you go, just put it out there and trust, and you'll get, you know, whatever it is. And I agree to some extent, but, you know, again, I think that if you're fighting against the current, you know what I mean? If it's meant for you and you put your energy into it and your thoughts into it and you allow it, it will definitely come, and it will come quicker. I have no argument whatsoever about that.
Right. It's interesting when we, you know, I was listening to Gina talk. Gina, you aren't here because, you know, I know that you are busy traveling about. A couple months ago, I danced with the Diavolo Dance Company. And one of the things that we talked about is that when you leap, whether you're leaping, you know, 10 feet in the air or 20 feet in the air, whatever, that you yell flying, and the people underneath you yell set. And they would tell the catchers that they had to yell set so boldly, because if I yelled flying and I heard set, I wouldn't trust to jump 20 feet in the air or 17 or wherever I was jumping in darkness and doing an aerial through the air that somebody was going to catch me. But when the set voice was so strong, when I yelled flying and people yelled set, I would trust that somebody would catch me before I hit the ground, and I could just literally leap through midair, through darkness. And I think that when we know, whether it's a group of people yelling set, or that we say that it's God or spirit or whatever it is that we call that we divinely trust is set, and that is there to catch us so we can fly freely, that we, just like you're saying, ask, where we yell flying and say, this is what I need, you know, I need to be caught right now, or I need an answer right now, or I need whatever that is, and then we hear set. And like you're saying, sometimes the answer comes right out of you, and you don't even know that you knew that information. And I've watched it happen, Gina, with you, where all of a sudden you just, you know, it's like this ancient sage just comes purling through, you know, purl the wisdom through your lips. And so I think it's a brilliant conversation to have, and especially if you talk about the global conversation. And like you're saying, Chris, you know, that when we set an intentionality, certainly things happen much faster and much smoother than when we don't, or when we don't have a clear direction of even where we want that energy to flow and come from.
Yeah, right. You call it about giving up control.
I'm sorry? Tina, yeah. Go ahead. Yes.
It's about giving up control and trusting that there is a greater intelligence that has way more access to information and resources than you have. I mean, I used to be general manager of the universe, and then I resigned, because I couldn't keep all the balls in the air, and it was stressful trying to manage too many things. Whereas if I just manage my being and my state, I let the universe take care of itself. I show up in my agreement, shorter than me, in the best possible me, and you're all players, you know?
I love that you are the general manager of the universe, and I also love just what Chris is saying, because I really do believe that there is a lot of conversation on energy, and it really is, you know, the, okay, how do we send that intentionality, and how do we, it's just like, what was the wonderful children's story, since you love the kitchen so much, and Stone Soup, where they put the stone in the pot, and they invited people to have some stone soup, and then people started contributing carrots and, you know, celery or whatever, and then they had soup, but the fact that the intent was to share something warm with people. And I think that just in like you're saying, when you don't know, you ask, and the intentionality of it's all going to be okay. I actually saw something on your Facebook very similar to that today. Wasn't there some great posting of a picture, like everything's going to be fine, or if you know, everything is. It was something along that line you posted. It was a fabulous picture.
The reception was about the picture was what?
It was something like everything's going to be fine.
breaking up slightly. Everything. I can't remember that picture, Nicole.
Yeah, we're losing. Yeah. She was talking about that you have a posting on your Facebook that's sort of referencing what she was just talking about. We dropped her again. She'll call back in. She must be having some, I'm wondering if she's calling from her cell phone and maybe there's a cell phone interference or something, you know, no, or a drop of rain. and so she was mentioning that you had a Facebook posting.
Well, I did. I love the idea of the stone fruit. I know that story, and I'm going to go to Sydney. I'm going to get an invite for a stone fruit party and see what shows up.
Oh, that's awesome! That's awesome for sure.
People bring in their gifts.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. Again, it's intention, and you know, I govern a lot of how I live and interact with people on intention, and that becomes, you know, a very important factor for me. So welcome back, Nicole, to your show.
Well, thank you. I love it because when calls drop like that, I always think the energy is so powerful and so strong. We're like so combustible, you know. We just blasted through all the sound barriers and sound fields. And so I always think this is a really high energy show.
Set your intent that you will now stay connected for the remainder of the show, and it will be.
Okay, but I'm glad that you were here, and it's so nice to have, and it's actually so wonderful to have you here, you know, to co-host, because you're such a marvelous host, you know, in your own right, and I always love your questions and your conversations, and I always, when I talk to you, you know, feel that I learn something, and I'm intrigued, and I'm impassioned, and so it's really nice having you here, so thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to have your energy. No, of course. And, you know, Gina, we so appreciate you being here. And before, you know, we don't have a lot of time left, but again, I just wanted to give the information of how people can find you and your blog and your work and how they can be part of this global conversation with you.
Yeah, find me on Twitter as well, Gina Lazenby. It's the beauty of the internet. If you just have somebody's name, you can find them. So not that many people. I'm around on Twitter as well.
Your name for us.
Yeah, Gina Lazenby. G-I-N-A-L-A-Z-E-N-B-Y, Lazenby.
Perfect. Beautiful. Well, it's such a joy and such a pleasure and to have you here with us. And certainly, you know, when I think about these conversations and think about what you're doing and think about this string of awakening and female empowerment, female leadership, female relationships, and in the male-female relationship in the business, in the corporate world, in families, in life, in, you know, just the way that you're reworking seminars and energy and the cross lines between travel and nations and even importantly in our own homes and how we connect and communicate with the people in our neighborhoods, in our lives, in our worlds with similar visions and those that have different visions and how you still can bring them into your world and collaborate. And I think that all of the tools and techniques and all of that you are doing are so spectacular. And as I was saying at the top of the show, certainly, you know, you are one of my mentors and my heroes and certainly somebody that, you know, I look up to with such great, you know, pride just even in knowing, because the work you're doing truly is so clear and it's so impeccable and it's so powerful and it's so needed and necessary on our planet and in our world. And I'm so glad that it's you with the baton and that you've got this incredible orchestra of energy and light and women and men and people and conversations that are all following you and all being heard throughout the world. And so I'm glad that you are our tourist and our traveler and our teacher and certainly a friend to all those that know you. So it's really quite beautiful.
Nicole, thank you. And, you know, in the work that you do and showing up with all the range of skills and gifts that you have, you give others such permission to get out the box and stop being the one or two things that they are. You know, the artist that you are and the businesswoman that you are, this is the thing, you know, when we were out in the world doing that, when you do that, you do give permission to others to be more than what the box puts them in, that we can be the mother, the artist, and the creator, and the accountant, and the business owner, rather than just the one thing that we're used to thinking of. And that's, I think that's the future, to tap into our creativity and show up into the world in those so many different ways and allow them to mix together, rather than have the woman that goes to work and then the woman that comes home and has the family. I think there's just so many ways that we can bring our gifts to the world, and it's definitely an example of that, and it's great work you're doing here, because people can, you know, incredible guests that you have on your show and all the work that you do, it is giving a light to people, to give them permission to live life in a different way. So wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Nicole.
Wow. Well, thank you. It's been such a pleasure. And such a gift and such an honor, and I'm so excited for the work you're doing, and I hope that in the future we can bring you back and have updates on your global work and your global communities, and certainly we want to bring you back to talk about your books and how people can be part of that and how they really, I mean, I everything that you do, but I would, you know, suggest the things that you said for your home as far as bringing love into the home and, you know, clearing that clutter and the organization. I think that those are all things that we can go out and start today to change our lives and to pull people into our kitchens, whether we can cook or not, just in a way that we can nurture people and talk to people where they're, you know, like you were saying, they're not sitting in rows and chairs, but they're facing each other and looking in each other's eyes and speaking to each other's hearts. And how different those conversations can be and impactful around the world. And I'm just so glad that it's you that's doing it. And so you're such a gift. And I thank you for gifting all of us your time today. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure and honor. Thank you so much, Nicole. Delighted.
Thank you. Thank you. We look forward to having you on again. So
yay.
Have a wonderful weekend. All right. Thank you, Jean. Just amazing. I absolutely love what she's doing. I do. I love that she's part of this global conversation, and I love that she is to these different states and cities and countries and literally opening up these energy fields, these doorways, these portals of light, and that she's creating a space for people to communicate at a much higher level, and that her awareness and her trust and the energy and the flow and all these things that you need and these tools and techniques to create an unlimited life are really part of her every breath and her every moment. And that's such a wonderful example for all of us, and especially to the female community and, you know, the sisterhood throughout the world, but to the men as well, because the way that she's working, we're not in competition with. We are just sharing our unique abilities and bringing those to the table as valuable gifts. And I think that's a wonderful conversation to have. So marvelous to have her here today. And then next Saturday, you have no idea. I'm like dancing around my living room and doing somersaults and cartwheels, which I can do about next Saturday's guest. But we finally have Matt Weinstein on. And Matt, as you've heard me say over and over and over again, is one of my favorite people in the entire world. And I do not say that lightly. He is truly one of my very favorite people. And I've never laughed. So, I mean, days after being with him, my ribs still hurt from laughing so hard. He is the funniest man. And he owns a company called Playfair. And he goes into these companies and corporations, and he brings play into Fortune 500 companies, play into relationships, play into the world, play into society. And it makes you, in talking to him, you will laugh harder than you've ever laughed in your life, but you will also be so connected to the joy of all that is, and you will remember that time when you played as a child and that you play now, and whether you play in relationships and love, or that if you have one of the busiest, most successful companies, how you can make double and triple your income by opening that lid to joy and to laughter and to fun and how people relate to one another. He's just amazing. He's amazing. He's somebody that, you know, I want in my life to my very last breath, And I can't imagine a more fun guest for our show. So we have Matt Weinstein from Playfair. It's a show not to be missed. And if you're listening to the show today, tell your friends if they want to hear something extraordinary, something hysterical, something fun, to call next Saturday and to hear Matt. And he was amazing. I even said to Matt, we were talking about the Hourglass Bride, and we were talking about hosting and people that I'd come to your life, and I've actually witnessed Matt host many events as well, and he is so joyful, so full of ecstasy, so full of pleasure, so full of fun, and when he's on stage, you don't want to leave. You don't want the next person to come on stage. You don't want to leave the room. You don't want to leave for a meal. There's just something about you that is so compelled to joy and to laughter and to fun. And I always think about how Shakespeare called them players, and they're called screenplays. In theater, we see play, and there has to be an element of fun throughout that, and that if we create that in our own life, what a special, wonderful world that would be. So we have it. So join us tomorrow for Hourglass Bride at 2 o'clock Pacific time. We have an attorney talking about all of those legal issues when you are together, so it is a show not just for women tomorrow, but certainly for men. If you're interested in estate planning, if you're interested in will, if you're interested in prenuptial agreements, if you're interested in anything legal that once you become a couple, whether you're just starting your life together, even if you've been together 25, 50 years, how do you make those legal decisions together, and where do you go for help, and how do you know somebody's good and all of that? So we're going to have that discussion tomorrow, which will just going to be great. Okay, so please join us for Hourglass Brides next week. Don't forget to tune in for Matt Weinstein from Playfair. And today we want to thank Gina Lazenby and her extraordinary work in Healthy Home, her extraordinary work in Feng Shui, and certainly all she is doing for the women of the world in feminine leadership and feminine power and feminine communication and feminine circles and in relationships, whether they be male-female relationships, business relationships, or relationships to one another, or even global relationships, as we were talking about in Africa and India and some of these other countries. So, you know, an honored guest today. Certainly an important conversation to continue once we're off the show with your friends, with your family. How does that work? What does that look like? And if we can all just be in that kind of flow and trust that we're exactly where we're supposed to be, that we're going to receive all that we need, ask for help, ask for the answers to the questions we don't know, and trust that it's going to come to us and that we really are okay. And as we have this last minute on the show, I know today there is an incredible storm, and so we just want to send all of our blessings and our love out there as well, and to, you know, all of those people that are battling this storm, battling the winds, and who are displaced today, know that they have a global family that loves them, and that we are all rooting for them, and we are all here to help one another. So we just want to send out our prayers and our love and our light. I wish you all an incredible week, great gratitude, Gina Lazenby, and look forward to seeing you next week with Matt Weinstein. Have a wonderful week.